I'm Anita Annabelle, and this is The Good Chat.
No, I'm not like compliments.
I'm quietly, I'm loving it.
I love making friends. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm a psychic. This podcast is going to be a
little chit chat.
This is probably the best chat. No, that's why this is called The Good Chat. We get good chat, mate.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Good Chat. I am your host, Anita Annabelle. On this episode, I speak to director Gracie Otto and producer Cody Greenwood, who are the powerhouse team behind the new documentary Under the Volcano. This film tells the true life story of the remote Caribbean island Montserrat, where under the shadow of an active volcano, Sir George Martin and the world's biggest recording artists made music and myth that defined an era. We chat about how Montserrat became such an important place for these artists, how Sting brought his very own psychic to the island, and how both Gracie and Cody want to see the industry changed for women. It was such an enlightening chat, and if you want to see the documentary for yourself, you can purchase and download Under the Volcano from iTunes. So, here is Gracie Otto and Cody Greenwood.
It was a glorious dream that George Martin had.
A fantastic state-of-the-art studio in the Caribbean.
It was so successful. It was a hit factory.
He's recognised as the greatest record producer the industry has yet seen, George Martin.
George's idea was to take people out of an environment, to put them into harmony with nature.
Going to Montserrat was like going into a dream.
It was great to have an environment around us where you could escape to.
The characters that worked in the studios became part of people's lives.
George, the cook, was in the band. The housekeeper was in the band. It's like it was all one big band.
There was no doubt there was a magic on Montserrat.
This was sort of the rock star dream.
It tied in creativity with being in a special place.
At any time in the studio, it's very easy to lose perspective, especially when you're locked up and it becomes your whole world.
The old Brothers in Arms album was done in a few days.
The place sort of intensified everything that you were.
I mean, we weren't physically aggressive with each other, but it got pretty heated.
We went there for the isolation. Here we were in this paradise, which we soon turned into a living hell.
When the volcano went off, that was a pinnacle point of change. A point where nothing was ever going to be quite the same again.
It's like seeing something you've created falling into disrepair. Everything has a period. You bring something out of nothing, but it always goes back to nothing again.
The 80s was like the Renaissance, the golden era of studio recording.
It's about the dream that George had of that wonderful space in Montserrat where you had the sun, the sea, nature, and music.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I'm thrilled to be chatting to the two of you. Such amazing young guns in such a huge space. So firstly, let's talk about this incredibly exciting project, Under the Volcano. I've watched it. I loved it. People need to get on board immediately. It's so fascinating. And it obviously tells the story of some of the most famous musicians in the world. So talk to me about how you both got involved in this project.
Yeah, the project originated with myself as the producer. I grew up knowing everything about Montserrat because my mom lived there in the 70s as an artist. And
Wow. Yeah,
she met Sir George Martin down there in the late 70s when he had the crazy idea to build a recording studio there. And so she was living there. She made her living off selling her paintings to the recording artists. So I knew everything about the studio and then, you know, had the crazy idea to make a film about it a few years ago.
So I have to tell you a bit of a funny story with my whole Montserrat type, how it's related to me. My family's Spanish and my auntie is 16 years younger than my mum. And when she was born, they wanted to call her Montserrat.
No way.
It's a very Spanish word. It's like, yeah. it's a very popular Spanish name. And funnily enough, her siblings were like, you can't call her Montserrat. So I've grown up knowing, but but yours is so much, so much cooler, the involvement, absolutely. So Sir George Martin pushed the boundaries in the industry, which is why he's such an important figure. Why do you think this is such an interesting story for people to know?
So George Martin was a visionary. His work that he'd done with the Beatles, and you know, after that in the recording industry. I think for us, why the story is so fascinating is that the studio was only around for 10 years, but it's like this time capsule into the recording industry at that time. But also, because we were able to access a lot of the musicians and their stories, it's a really fascinating look on the creative process and what happens when you put people in isolation, which I think we can all relate to at the moment with COVID. Some of us create really well, some of us absolutely hate it. So it's a sort of looking glass, I think, into that process. And that for us is what we fell in love with during the research period and then wanted to make the film about.
And it's such a fascinating story. And you worked with some insanely famous musicians that must have been wildly amazing. But what was one story that stuck out to each of you that they told you about this time in their life?
I think for me, it was, the different experiences they had down there. And I always like when people are reflecting back on a time in the present day. So I really enjoyed police interviews because I felt like they kind of, you know, came to the conclusion during the interview that, like, yes, they might have not got along and they had different ways of doing things, but that energy that they had between them and that friction actually brought out the best in their music, and they could acknowledge that even though they aren't together as a band. That definitely was something that stuck out for me.
I mean, Sting, hello. That is amazing in itself. Like, what a powerhouse. And Police, of course.
You would have liked that one because there's been Psychic and...
He brought a psychic down to the island with him, who was down there the whole time with him.
The history of that, you know, that he probably would have seen and heard and picked up on so many people that were around there beforehand. Do you know of any experiences like that?
In terms of Sting knowing people in Montserrat beforehand? Or?
No, in terms of like having psychic experiences, maybe people who'd passed or anything like that.
The guy that he had down there was this guy called Aleph, who also like did a birth chart for me that I've still got for me when I was born. But the funniest thing about that was my mum remained friends with Sting and all those guys. And when Aleph is still alive. Mum thought that Sting's psychic, Aleph, had died. And she wrote to Sting and said, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but Aleph has died. And when Sting came to Perth one year for a concert and I was a kid, I remember going backstage and Sting turning around to my mum and being like, I'm so embarrassed. Aleph is still alive. I sent flowers to his family in Africa to say sorry. And Mum was like, oh, I must have got my, you know, my wires crossed. And I was like, Mum, you can't just tell Sting his psychic is dead. Like, that's a thing. You know, but
I'm pretty sure that Sting would, to be honest, is probably a massive intuitive himself, so he could probably pick up. That's actually quite funny.
Yeah.
That's actually quite funny. And you know, for both of you now knowing, Cody, for particularly your story as well with the involvement of your mum, but I'm really curious for you, what's it like paving your own way in the industry and telling this story away from your mum?
Yeah, it was, you know, prior to making Under the Volcano, I've worked in the documentary industry for probably about 5 years prior, and I was telling really amazing stories working with NITV, with emerging Indigenous filmmakers, and so I was always really fascinated by community as a topic, and it comes across, I think, in Under the Volcano. So, you know, it's one of those things where Under the Volcano is the first sort of big project, but I'd worked in the industry prior, and I'm obviously working on other projects outside of it. But I think for me, career-wise, it's obviously the first big project. It was very ambitious. It was not an easy project to put together because of the music and the archive. But it's one of those ones that now that I've done it, I'm like, okay, I could do a big feature documentary again. Like, I'm sort of ready to head back into that territory. But it was
definitely... would be, we say, with one band.
Like... Yeah, we should have done one band and not 10.
I mean, you've definitely put your stripes on the board, that's for sure. And Gracie, for you, I mean, you've been directing TV shows like, and as we were speaking about before, So the Other Guy, Stands the Other Guy, and also Bump. Oh my God, I love that show. What's it like kind of going in and out of the documentary space and then into TV?
I think, you know, I really love working across all mediums. Like I just finished on The Other Guy. We just finished the last ADR and then we left the next day to do Under the Volcano. And for me, I love TV because I love the pace of it and I love shooting, you know, 8 to 10 scenes a day, and you kind of, you don't spend as long editing. And documentary is kind of like a much slower burn. I'm away from it, which is good because you can always come back and have new ideas, or you find new research, or you get new interviews, and it, you know, really creates a story a lot in the edit. And so there's something, yeah, quite amazing about that, and deep diving on topics that, yeah, you know, sometimes you'd sit there and watch 20 interviews from something on MTV because you're looking for one particular thing, and then just kind of, you know, it's like going to university. You get this whole like cultural experience when you're doing just the study of something. Like I always say to people who go on Hard Quiz now and do like Air Studios Montserrat, because, you know, it's like people have their thing that they, you know, they're experts in.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like I never went to university, but I like to treat it like a kind of, yeah, like a study in something, which, you know, reminded me of being in high school and being interested in a topic.
So you did Sydney Film School, but you didn't go to uni like as such.
No, I wanted to go to Paris, and I went to Paris when I was 18. So I went to Sydney Film School at 17 because I did a 1 year course that went through everything. So I was like, I don't want to go to uni for 4 years only to be able to go to Paris to study in the third year because I'll be 20 and I'll be old. That was my mentality. So I went to Sydney Film School. And so, yeah, I was one of the OGs there. Like I went back there, I was doing a writer's room recently, and they're like, oh, I'm a student at the school. And I was like, oh, I was there in 2004. Like,
okay, was that 16 years ago that we were at school?
Yeah. It also was great because it was really, you know, there was no discrepancy about being a male or a female at the school or with age as well. I was the youngest. I think there was one kid who was 15 at the school, but there was a guy who was like 60. And I think he was the oldest in my class. So it was a real mixed bag of like different ages. And some people were studying at night or, you know, had other jobs. Some people, you know, their parents were putting them through film school. And, you know, it was kind of a real mixed bag, which was really kind of how the industry is in a way.
Of course, like all different backgrounds, all different ages. I mean, that's probably what you've been working with and you're really used to. And you've obviously also grown up surrounded by the arts, having a very successful family in the arts. How did you pave your own way?
I started in high school doing videos for the, what is it called? The school assembly. Like we went to New Caledonia and I cut a video and I would do like the school trip videos. And then I started making videos for friends I played sport with to get into colleges, like softball people and stuff, like their audition tapes of sport. And then I made a film called Kill Blondes in year 12, which I think they still study now at for part of, yeah, New South Wales education, which is great. And for me, I think that was because when you do your HSC, you're just a number. You don't have like a name on the end of your film. And so I got 100 out of 100 for that, which bumped up my UAI because it was extension to English and I wasn't good at English at all. So I think because I got, yeah, just perfect score for that, I was like, oh, this is something that isn't, you know, I don't need to, yeah, be involved with the family to know that I could go to Sydney Film School. And I think, yeah, obviously growing up, having dad as an actor and my sister, you know, I was able to go on sets and I went to the theatre all the time. But I played a lot of sport and I wasn't necessarily that interested in, thinking of it as a career. But I think a lot of us end up, you know, doing what our parents do in a way, or families. I'm sure if my parents are real estate agents, I might have been real estate. I don't know. But, yeah, it was just interesting. I think a lot of my friends that I grew up with whose parents are, you know, actors or directors or whatever, we all kind of laugh now to be like, we're all actually in the industry. We did, you know, Jill Armstrong's daughter and George Miller's daughter and Brian Brown's daughter. Who would have thought that here we are?
But it's, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And what about you, Cody? Do you have any family? Is this how you got into it? Or did you, apart from your mum being the most creative artist, I mean, how did you pave your
own
way?
Was actually a documentarian. So yeah, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Prior to being an artist, she was making films. She was making a film when she actually met my dad, a documentary. But I went to university in Perth, which was great, but I don't even know what I was doing there. Like half the time I wasn't actually even at uni. And then I ended up doing exchange to a film school in Oxford, in the UK, had a great time, moved over to London, finished my university there, and then went over to UCLA and studied producing at UCLA. And that for me was a moment where I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm meant to be doing. I don't think nobody told me what a producer was when I was at uni in Perth. But anyway, I got there in the end and I totally fell in love with producing. And then, you know, I've always been a huge documentary lover. Most of my career has been in documentary. I'm now moving into feature film drama, which is a totally different beast. But, yeah, but Under the Volcano was just like, it was such a wonderful experience. It really made me fall in love with documentary filmmaking.
For both of you, when creating a documentary, firstly, how did you two become such a powerhouse duo? How did you meet? How did this happen?
I'd heard of Gracie's work and I really wanted a female director because I knew that most of the interview subjects would be men. And I was like, we need a female lens on this. And I want somebody who is curious and who wants to uncover the human relationship side of making music, not just record after record after record. And Gracie was my first choice in Australia. And then I got really fortunate that she came on board. And then as we got to know each other, you know, we traveled together. My first stint was like 8 weeks overseas together and like sharing Airbnbs and like just really, you know, hilarious times. But we're actually so similar in terms of, you know, we used to say we could go on the Amazing Race because we both move at like crazy speed. We'd be in the airport and I'd be like, you get the bags, I'll do this. And Gracie would be like 10 steps ahead of me. So we just got really lucky, I think.
You did touch on the female lens. So I'm really interested to know, as young women in this industry, how do you push forward in such a male-dominated arena?
Well, I think, you know, I've tried to learn to be really proud of my work and really honest about, like, how hard we worked on it and how much work we did do on it. I think females are always really, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm just working on that TV show and not, you know, kind of selling themselves in that way. So I'm trying to, you know, be better at doing that because, you know, some people go, oh, it's so great, you're, like, breaking through in the industry. And I kind of go, well, yeah, I've actually worked since I was 17. I've been working for 15 years in the film industry. It's just that it's taken, no one sees the nights when you're making, you know, a fashion film at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to edit something together that you're not getting paid for to try and get something on your reel. They just start to see all the stuff that is then coming out going, oh, I want to do that. And it's like, yeah, it's years of work. So I think, you know, for us, it's also important to have, we had two female directors attachments on the film. You know, most people when they get attachments, it's a hard, that's the thing that I always try to do on ads or anything I'm working on is try to bring someone under my wing because that kind of seems to be the pathway in. And it's hard because obviously like men would most likely pick a young male intern when they're doing that. But I think the further the women climb up the ladder, then, you know, it's natural for the men to kind of go, oh, I can, that's like when I was young, I'll get that guy to come on set or whatever. So I think, you know, there's really good initiatives like Free the Bid that allow young women to kind of, yeah, throw themselves in there and say, I want to be an attachment on something. And then, you know, they come and they get paid and they do, you know, a day on an ad or they can be attachments on stuff.
Yeah. I absolutely loved what you just said about taking somebody under your wing and really helping them. I think that is such an amazing way to look at things because I think there's always wanting that step in the door and you can't often have that unless someone just takes a chance on you. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's important to do. And I think, you know, I'd always wanted to do that when I was younger and there weren't as many opportunities as there are now. And I always, you know, feel when people email me or passionate about something, like, you know, I always go, oh, it reminds me of me. And then you start going, oh, I can help them.
All right. You're sounding very old there, Gracie. Oh, it sounds like when I was back in the day, when I started out 17 years ago.
I do feel like old in the industry, but it was interesting. I was on a show recently where actually there were so many young people on it, this show, The Moth Effect. And I did turn around and be like, oh my God, I'm like the medium like age here. And I'm always the youngest person on set. And now I'm like, oh, my God, am I going to soon be the old person?
So, Cody, what about you? How do you feel the industry needs to change for women?
I think it's definitely changing. Like in the 10 years that I've been in the industry, there's been some incredible initiatives introduced, a lot of which I've been a part of, like the Attagil Lab at the moment I'm in, which is a female-driven narrative lab. I just got an initiative called Breaking the Celluloid Ceiling and from Screen West, which is about – you know, I'm being mentored by Liz Watts, who did Animal Kingdom and The King.
Yes.
There's some amazing initiatives. I still think we've got so far to go though. And, you know, it's not only about behind camera, it's in front of camera. It's about women being able to see characters on screen that they feel are representative of themselves. And so I think in Australia, we're putting so much, you know, great initiatives together that are really going to help. But it's also, like Gracie said, it's about other women bringing up women. And then also, you know, looking to have those conversations with men as well about how they can, you know, we can work together to bring up women in the industry. So I'm really hopeful that we're going to get there. But I think as long as everyone just realizes that there's still quite a lot to do, I think that's really important.
And to finish off, I'd love a piece of advice that you both could give individually to a young female in particular starting out in this industry.
I would just say, yeah, it's good to just, you know, try and get in touch with people who you admire and people whose work you like and see if there's a way, you know, to learn from them, because there is always a way that somebody can help someone else out. Mm. And don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah, I definitely got to where I did by putting myself out there. And when I wanted something in the industry, I wanted to get somewhere, having a real refuse to lose attitude, which sometimes you do feel a little bit insane because you're like, I'm continuing to try and people keep saying no to me. But I think that persistence is so key, and it's really key in our industry. So that's probably the piece of advice that I think has really got to me where I'm in my career at the moment.
Well, congratulations. This film is amazing. The caliber of people that you spoke to and the passion that you both have really emanates on screen. So I'm so thrilled to have spoken to you both today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I love My Fortune Read, but I'm also petrified at the same
time. Send me a message on Instagram and I will absolutely help you. All right, guys. It was such great to chat.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was such a good chat. On the next episode, I chat to 9 perfect strangers and Wentworth star, Aussie actor Zoe Tarakis. And if you're new to this podcast, why don't you check out my chat with actor Tim Kano from the feature film Great White.
The scenery, though, was absolutely spectacular. What was it like filming in Queensland? I mean, you're in our own backyard.
Yeah, that was really, really stunning. It was kind of breathtaking. We'd get picked up really early, sometimes 3 or 4 in the morning, and taken on a couple of hour drive and then on a boat and then switch another boat to get to the reef or these islands. And they were just phenomenal. They were places you'd never see unless I never would have gone there or seen these kind of stunning locations apart from working on this. So it was just beautiful.
And if you like this chat, you can rate, follow and review and follow me on Instagram at AnitaAnnabelle_ and at The Good Chat Pod. See you next week.